Why does finding love feel harder than ever before? We swipe through endless profiles, we have more freedom than any generation in history, yet so many of us end up heartbroken, confused, or emotionally exhausted. The self-help industry tells us to work on ourselves, fix our commitment issues, or learn better communication skills. But what if the problem isn't us? What if modern love hurts because the entire architecture of romance has fundamentally transformed? This isn't about individual psychology. It's about how social forces have reshaped intimacy itself. Understanding this shift won't make love painless, but it might help us stop blaming ourselves for struggles that are, in many ways, built into the system. In Jane Austen's world, self-worth stemmed from moral character, not male approval. When Darcy called Elizabeth Bennet tolerable, she responded with wit, not devastation. Her value came from community-recognized moral codes. 19th-century courtship operated within dense social networks. Men arrived mediated by family and friends vouching for their character. Samuel Clemens submitted recommendation letters before courting his future wife. The practice of calling occurred at the woman's home, giving her and her parents control. A man couldn't initiate without invitation. Clear rules created careful stages, speaking, walking out, keeping company, ensuring emotional involvement followed established sequences. When behavior didn't match intentions, like Willoughby in Sense and Sensibility, the problem was obvious to everyone. Economic interests reinforced passion rather than opposing it. Marriage's survival importance generated powerful emotional commitment. When love addressed social position rather than inner essence, rejection stung less personally. You weren't rejected as a person, but as someone occupying a particular social place. Romance has since become a self-regulated market where we evaluate partners using criteria disconnected from shared moral frameworks. Modern dating features anxious women waiting for commitment while men remain emotionally distant. Yet research reveals a paradox. Men benefit more from marriage than women and view it more positively. Only 37% of men versus 59% of women believe fulfilling lives are possible without marriage. So why the reluctance? Traditional masculine status markers have eroded. Household authority, workplace independence, and male-only spaces have largely vanished. Sexuality has become perhaps the most significant remaining marker of masculinity. Men across all backgrounds now access multiple partners without financial obligation, moral judgment, or marriage pressure. Women's greater commitment readiness stems from an exclusivist pairing strategy. Delayed marriage for education and career, combined with the beauty industry's emphasis on youth and narrow reproductive windows, creates time pressure that generates earlier, faster commitment seeking. Men create emotional boundaries through strategic scarcity. As one interviewee admits, the one who is wanted more has more power. In abundant sexual markets, men lack incentives to end their search. Deeper still lies aboulilic commitment phobia, where the capacity to desire itself unravels. Internet forums reveal individuals struggling not with too many options, but with inability to feel or sustain emotions toward anyone, reflecting a shift from intense bonds to cool individuality. Love uniquely enhances self-worth. When someone loves us, we worship at our own altar. Romance overcomes ordinary invisibility and creates a sense of uniqueness. But modern love has transformed how we experience this recognition. In 19th-century courtship, self-worth derived from social position and moral codes. When Elizabeth Barrett Browning wrote that, "Nothing has humbled me as much as your love," she was testing commitment through ritual self-deprecation, not seeking validation. These expressions presumed objective self-evaluation against shared standards. Today's relationships center on perpetual validation. Women complain their partners never call them smart or make them feel special, despite loyalty and kindness. Social worth must now be achieved performatively through constant interaction rather than derived from status. This creates profound ontological insecurity. Daniel, a confident 50-year-old professional, obsessively analyzes text messages seeking constant validation through signals that indicate I am loved. The problem intensifies because requesting commitment has become illegitimate. Unlike 19th-century courtship that explicitly signaled marriage intentions, today the intention to commit must be the accomplishment, not the precondition of a relationship. This dynamic disproportionately affects women. Amanda couldn't say I love you first in her 2-year relationship for fear of appearing weak. If you say it and the other person doesn't feel this way, you become the weaker one. Edmund Burke and Karl Marx, despite opposing politics, both recognized how modernity's empire of light and reason strips away illusions that made traditional social relations bearable. This ambivalence defines modern love. Enchanted love involves powerful symbols connecting us to something sacred, mobilizing our entire self without rational justification. The beloved becomes quasi-divine, an irresistible force compelling devotion. Scientific explanations have disenchanted love by transforming it from mystical experience into something explainable through the unconscious, hormones, or brain chemistry. Feminism profoundly transformed love by challenging traditional gender roles and reframing romance through power relations, identifying it as the pivot of women's oppression. The feminist principle of power symmetry has rationalized intimacy, encouraging reflexive monitoring of emotions and prioritizing professional status over private desires. Sexual harassment policies exemplify this rationalization. Harvard's policy declares relationships between those with direct professional responsibility as inherently asymmetrical, prioritizing community fairness over individual sentiment. Online dating intensifies rationalization through psychological profiles and commensuration, making qualitative traits quantitatively comparable. Traditional erotic codes depended on thick difference between genders, intermittence, revelation and concealment, and pleasurable ambiguity. Modern therapeutic and feminist discourses have undermined these through transparency and explicit consent, making relationships more equal but potentially less charged with passion. Modern institutions fuel daydreaming through unprecedented media production, offering powerful narratives of the good life. Consumer culture transforms anticipatory projection into perpetual cycles of love and disappointment. Fiction profoundly shapes our emotional lives, condensing love into recognizable templates, strong emotions that bestow meaning, surmount obstacles, and create bliss. We've become Emma Bovary's, with emotions embedded in fictional narratives, unconsciously imitating characters' behaviors and goals. Modern relationships constantly verge on disappointment because we lack the emotional security of pre-modern societies, where life paths were predetermined. Domestic life produces irritations, small annoyances about character traits or habits. Research shows long-distance relationships are more stable because idealization is easier with distance and negatively correlated with interaction frequency. We approach potential partners through a psychological ontology, viewing others as having stable, knowable properties. This creates rigid categories, hindering actual connections. Barbara searches for men matching her complex psyche using fixed criteria. Susan rejected a man based on his seating preference, believing it revealed his character. The internet marks a decisive transformation. Unlike traditional romantic imagination, which was retrospective and based on bodily presence, internet imagination is prospective and information thick, splitting psychological knowledge from physical encounter. Users embrace the fantasy that their digital correspondent is their true love, only to face disappointment when meeting the actual, flawed human. The puzzle isn't why love hurts. It's why the feminist revolution hasn't fulfilled our longing for passion. Despite unprecedented bodily sovereignty, middle-class heterosexual women face new forms of emotional domination. The great transformation of love has fundamentally changed partner selection through enlarged pools, longer processes, and the structural possibility of trading up. Attractiveness and sexual capital now signal social worth, making love an aspect of moral inequality, dividing genders, and separating successful from unsuccessful individuals. Irony, commitment phobia, and ambivalence constitute the destructuration of will and desire, shifting us from intense bonds to cool individuality. Gender equality's goal isn't equal detachment, but equal capacity for passionate emotions. We need models where masculinity and passionate commitment aren't incompatible. As Jonathan Franzen notes, pain hurts but doesn't kill, and avoiding it through an anesthetized dream of self-sufficiency means not truly living. Recognizing our struggles as responses to transform structures, not personal failures, lets us reclaim passionate commitment while preserving genuine gains of freedom and equality.